Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the latest installment in our very occasional series of podcast specials dedicated to trailer breakdowns. Very rare. When was the last time we did one of these? Doctor Strange?
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
I incorrectly predicted a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, if you want incorrect predictions, you've come to the right place.
No predictions. Guarantees.
Amon guarantees.
I didn't guarantee all of what I said that day. I guaranteed some of it, not all of it.
You sit on a throne of lies. Unbelievable. There might be a few Hugh Better Believer buddies in this podcast. There might be a few Amon guarantees because I am Chris Hewitt. Welcome, everybody. I am joined by Amon Warman.
Hello.
And Helen O'Hara.
Hello. I don't give guarantees.
The only guarantee I give is that I don't give guarantees.
Well, it's not a guarantee. It's more of a guideline, suggestion.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what yours would be. Anyway, and we'll think about it at some point. But here's how much we love you guys. Here is how much we love you guys. We are recording this at 10:30 p.m. on Tuesday, the 4th of October. Helen and Amon have just got back from seeing what I'm guessing are excruciatingly dull films ahead of the LFF. Put a thumbs up if you've seen an excruciatingly dull film tonight. Okay, let's not name the films. But let's leave that tantalizing tidbit out there for the listeners. And I've got COVID. And so I feel like death warmed up. So this is going to be a really fun...
At least you're warm.
At least I'm warm.
There you
I don't
go.
Know. My extremities, they're not good. I don't want to think about my extremities. Anyway,
I really don't. No.
This is going to be a deep-ish dive because I'm also recording this in my bedroom and my wife needs to go to bed at some point. So
it doesn't seem sensible to do a deep-ish dive. You know, it's full of Atlanteans down there. There's real danger under the sea.
Under the sea.
That's good. Under the sea, it's better down where it's wetter, which is the subtext of Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which is the film that we're breaking down. I haven't mentioned that. I told you I'm very tired and I'm ill. Okay, give me a fucking break. Anyway, the second trailer for Black Panther Wakanda Forever hit the interwebs yesterday. And despite the fact that we're all very, very busy and one of us is actually dying, we've decided to get together tonight and bring you a trailer breakdown. Isn't that nice of us? I think that's nice of us. I think that's
Yay.
Good.
Yeah.
There we go.
Let's not pat ourselves on the back too much. We didn't make the film, but you know, it's something at least.
Let's not start sucking each other's dicks just yet. What's that film? What film is that from? Because the line is in my head way more than it should be. But, you know, it's from a film, isn't it? Let's not start sucking each other's dicks just yet. What's that from? I haven't just said it. It's not just something I say.
No, I'm pretty sure I've heard it before. But, oh boy.
Okay, anyway,
while you guys
think of a name for a Helen guarantee and where that line comes from, let's get into the trailer, shall we? Now, we're not going to go frame by frame because we've already burned 10 minutes just getting through the intro. But first of all, let's frame this trailer, shall we? And let's frame this film. Let's give it a little bit of context or consutext, if you will. Because this is, I think, the film that, I don't know, do you think this might be the biggest film of the year, or is Avatar 2 going to be the biggest film of the year, or is Top Gun Maverick still going to be the box office champ when all is said and done on December 31st for the calendar year? That is
For the calendar year, I mean,
the calendar year.
Then probably Avatar won't have taken over everything else at that point. I don't bet against James Cameron generally, though, as a rule in life. I find it unwise, but yeah, this is going to be a very big film. I will say that. That is as far as the Helen guarantee goes, which isn't a guarantee.
It's not a guarantee. But we also know it's going to be a very, very long film. It's 2 hours and 41 minutes. And Amon, that length, that length is needed, Amon. because this is a film that's got a lot to pack in. Everything I say is an innuendo right now. Just ignore that and carry on. So set the film up for people who somehow are under a rock. If you're under a rock right now, or if you're Aaron Ralston and you're listening to this podcast, then set up Black Panther Wakanda Forever for the folks at home.
Yeah, so this takes place in the aftermath of Avengers Endgame. Obviously, Chadwick Boseman's passing in real life has meant that T'Challa has passed in the MCU. And Wakanda is sort of reeling from that loss. And as they are reeling, the surface world sees this as an opportunity, I guess, to come into Wakanda and take their
surface vibranium.
The outside world. Sorry, I'm confusing outside world and surface world with Namor, because Namor is also attacking the surface world and he's got beef with Wakanda. makes demands of Wakanda that they either have to accept or accept the consequences of basically refusing his demand. So yeah, that is the basic setup for this. I love that this film is 2 hours and 41 minutes long, because the last couple of MCU films I've noted in both Thor Love and Thunder and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Thor Love and Thunder we now know had like a 2 hour mandate, which I think went against the film in terms of its character work. I said the similar thing about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It felt like they were trying to squeeze a lot in and they could have used more screen time to develop a few things. And given everything that this movie will have to pack in, given that it's honoring Chadwick Boseman, given that it's expanding the world of Wakanda, given that it's introducing us to new characters who are going to play a big role in the MCU beyond this movie, it needs time to develop all of that to a satisfying degree. And you only get to watch a movie for the first time once. So give the movie the screen time to land that impact in full force rather than release it and then do extended cuts and delete scenes or whatever. So I love that this film 2 hours 41 minutes long, and if Ryan Coogler's previous work is anything to go by, I think it's going to justify that runtime.
Yeah, unlike the films we saw tonight.
Yeah.
The film you saw tonight was not Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Let's just clear that up.
Last known.
For people, we did not see that. You did not see the film. I watched Liverpool Rangers from my sick bed. A good choice. I think I won. And in fact, they won. Anyway, you say landing in full force, and that's exactly what the character who takes the mantle of Black Panther does at the end of this trailer, falling from a great height, falling with style, landing on her feet, because it's a female Black Panther. Here's the thing. It's Shuri, isn't it? Why aren't they saying it's Shuri? Yeah.
I guess they want to leave that little shred, that little crumb of doubt. The way they did with Spider-Man, No Way Home, to be honest. We all knew that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were going to be in it. We knew that, but we still had that tiny shred of maybe we're wrong. Maybe they've played us. They've done it before. It wasn't Mephisto. You know, maybe all the theories are wrong. And I feel like that's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to give themselves just that like millimeter of wiggle room to deny that it's Shuri, but it's totally Shuri.
I don't see why they would do that, if I'm honest with you. But Amon, what's your take on this? Is it Shuri? Is it Shuri? Because it's Shuri in the comics. Shuri takes the mantle of Black Panther in the comics. You know, yeah. I read an interesting theory from Richard Newby, who's an excellent writer on the MCU. Not as good as us, obviously, but he's pretty good. And he was positing a theory that it might be a number of people who take the mantle of Black Panther in the movie at some point. It might be M'Baku. It might be Nakia. It might be Shuri. It might be even Queen Ramonda. You know, that it might be like a kind of Black Panthers, Wakanda Forever's situation going on here.
Yeah, I do think that Shuri in the shot we see at the end of this trailer, I don't think we're going to see multiple Black Panthers. I do think we're going to see multiple characters who have been decked out in a vibranium suit of some sort, because I think Shuri is going to go into overdrive in terms of creating tech to protect everyone as much as possible. We don't know exactly how T'Challa, the reason for T'Challa's passing in the MCU, but given Shuri's relationship with her brother, given that she is in charge with the technology, the protection of her brother, of the nation, I think this loss is going to send her to overdrive and just, you know, you get a vibranium necklace, you get a vibranium necklace, and you get...
So she's going to go full Tony. You see her going full Tony.
I see her going full Tony in certain respects, yes. So I would not expect to see, again, like, you know, M'Baku's, your Ramondas, and given a couple of shots in Australia, Ramonda's going to need some vibranium tech if the teasers tease what they're teasing. Sorry, that was a terrible census, but we will get to when
it's late. It's late, and at least one of us is COVID. You got to cut us some slack, people. You got to cut us some slack.
Yeah, let's just say, people are going to be needing vibranium tech, vibranium protection, and I think Shuri is going to be wanting to give out as much of that as possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's very, very interesting that idea. I hadn't considered that idea by when Richard Newby floated it, and I suddenly thought, well, that might make a little bit of sense, and it might also explain why they've been hiding, obfuscating this big reveal. You know, and maybe it doesn't happen until very, very late in the movie. Maybe part of the film is about an internal not a power struggle necessarily, because clearly we can see in the trailer that there's going to be a mournful air to this movie, and rightly so. There's going to be a somber and sober air to this movie. You're going to have major characters who are going to be mourning the loss of T'Challa, and obviously by wider extension, Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. And that T'Challa's passing in the MCU does create something of a power vacuum in Wakanda. And, you know, I'm not going to say that people are going to be butting heads about who might take on the mantle of the Black Panther, but there might be a little bit more politicking going on, maybe. And maybe there's an element of Shuri not feeling that she's ready for it, because if I'm right in thinking, it should kind of pass to her.
Or possibly her mother feeling like she isn't ready for it would make a lot of sense as well, having already lost her husband and her son, and also having lost her daughter and her son during the snap as well. Yeah. It would make a certain amount of sense if Ramonda was not exactly thrilled at the idea of her daughter going out to fight.
From both trailers and just the marketing campaign in general, it looks like Angela Bassett is going to have a much bigger role to play in this film. And that delights me on every single level, because she's freaking Angela the Queen in every respect of those words, Bassett. And she is a heavyweight actor who needs to be utilized. And I feel like this film is going to do that in a big way. I believe that she, at least at such a time when they sort of officially crown the new Black Panther, she's going to be the Queen Regent of Wakanda in this stead. And you see a couple of scenes that are teased in these trailers where she's going to the UN, where she's sitting on the throne, where she is clearly the woman holding court here, which is great to see.
It makes sense. Who else are you going to get for that role? There is the interesting thing about, we saw something of a struggle for power last time. We saw an idea of the succession in Wakanda being up for debate, being in question. And yet this time, if anything, it feels like that is less of a presence, which I think is because it would feel a little bit odd, and it would feel at odds with the kind of the meta-textual mourning for Chadwick, let alone T'Challa, for that country to descend back into sort of, you know, tribal bickering. I think at this point it would feel odd for the message that we as an audience need from it, never mind sort of the narrative itself.
That all said, you know, and I know that this phase, whatever phase we're in, 20, 30, I can't keep track of the phases anymore, but whatever phase we're in the MCU, you know, there's been an emphasis on youth usurping experience. And there's been an emphasis on, you know, blooding the youngins, so to speak. So I would absolutely love it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would absolutely love it if Ramonda became the Black Panther in this. You know, sticking it one for the oldies.
I would scream in the cinema if that happened. Oh my gosh! Like
simultaneously, I want to see this movie with you for the first time, and simultaneously, I don't, because I want to hear the movie.
Oh gosh! Yeah, nah, you would not be able to hear certain points of dialogue if you sat next to me watching this movie, most likely.
So they'll rewind the movie in the theater. They do that.
But like we got a glimpse of Ramonda in battle in the What If show very briefly, which was so cool. I asked her if we might see that replicated in live action. She was like, "Yeah, I'm old now." But old. I'm like, "Yeah, Angela Bassett, you look like you've been looking like you're 25 years old for like 20 years. You're gonna be fine." But yeah, we'll see what happens. I got my fingers crossed. That would be very cool.
Okay, but just checking, you guys don't think it'll be Bassett?
No.
Not principally, no.
It takes all sorts.
Oh, boy. Shall we...
Amon, did you get that joke? Did you get that joke, Amon?
Nope.
I didn't think you did. You youngins.
They're better sweets now, Chris. They don't need to eat all sorts.
This is true. There was Bassett's. Bassett's is the company that made licorice all sorts. Oh. And in the 80s, there was an advert where it went, Bassett's, it takes all sorts. Or I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. Maybe I've just imagined that. Who knows? Anyway, I think she's amazing. And she's one of the growing cadre of incredible character actors who've been slightly underserved in the MCU. So it'd be great to see her getting something to do in this one. And we see her on a beach earning 20% opposite Namor. Sutherland, yes. Namor, Lewis, Namor. And I'm going to do that every single time. You can be guaranteed. That's a you better believe it, buddy.
Don't feel obliged, Chris.
I have to feel it. I can't. The muse is in me, Helen. You know how it works. But Namor is the I was going to say bad guy of this movie, but we all know he's not going to be the bad guy of this movie. Both of their moms are going to be called Martha, and Black Panther and Namor are going to reconcile and face off against the true bad guy. I want to get into who you think that might be in just a second, but let's talk about Namor.
Yeah, no, he looks very cool. they found a way to make the winged feet cool. That's awesome. You don't think they're cool? Okay, let's get into this.
I'm the jury's out. It's one shot at the moment. It's one shot. And I love Namor as a character, and it's one of the greatest designs, I think. It's just a man in Speedos with wings on his feet, and he flies around, and he's a grade A dickhead. And that's who he is, right? Mm. And there's a lot of reinvention of the classic Namor look in this movie, and you know the sort of the introduction or the incorporation of Mayan elements into Atlantean culture, which is all very very cool and funky. And part of me, again, simultaneously, I want to see this movie with you, and simultaneously I want to be as far away from you as I possibly can. Simultaneously, I love the winged feet, and simultaneously I'm like, I'm not sure that they should have gone with that. But listen, if you told me when I was a kid that one day I would see Namor with winged feet flying around on the screen and it wouldn't have looked shit, like it wouldn't have looked goofy, then I would have not believed you. And this, so yeah, you've talked me around. Good. Well done.
Yes. You're completely right. The Mayan pulling those elements from cultures that we know. I think there's some Aztec elements in Namor's update here as well. All of it looks really, really cool. His underwater kingdom looks fantastic. His throne looks amazing. And he just looks like a really formidable antagonist, is the word I'm going to use here, as opposed to villain. And you know, I love that. These guys, you know, M'Baku, Nakia, Okoye, Shuri, we've seen them be very formidable before, but they're going to get challenged here in a big way. And not only with Namor, but with his lieutenants, Atuma is one of them. We see a shot of him in this trailer. He looks formidable as well. And in the comics, he has been somebody who has vied for Namor's throne many a time. I think there's another Atlantean, another Talalocan, who we see as one of Namor's lieutenants. I can't remember her name right now.
Do you mean Namora?
Yes. Namora. So I think Atuma and Namor may be the devil and the angel on Namor's shoulder in this film, either pushing him towards war with Wakanda or trying to pull him back towards peace, which would be interesting, especially given everything that Wakanda is going through in this moment.
So, Hell's Bells, for the people who may not know who Namor is, who is he? And why is he taking so long to show up? What the hell's going on?
that is the question, I guess, isn't it? We're gonna have to find out about that. It's interesting. I mean, so he's not Aquaman, is he? If we're being completely fair,
he came first.
I'm not saying he didn't come first. But like for people who have only seen the movies, he's not Aquaman. He is half Atlantean. He rules a kingdom under the sea. Not a fun one with the singing crabs, and
or the drum playing octopi.
The drum playing octopus. He is, he is, as you say, a bit of a dickhead. He's also a mutant, which is interesting. So the fact that they've waited until now may be, at least to some degree, tied to the fact that they want to keep that aspect of his character and keep this idea of mutant threat growing in the MCU.
And in this film, they call him Kukulkan, the feather serpent god. That was my M'Baku impression. I apologize.
Any impression where you have to say who you were doing after the impression is a good one. But I think you're right. I think, honestly, he's taken so long to appear in the MCU because they didn't have the rights to him. I think it's that simple. He was part of the Fantastic Four character, I guess, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. He's been a thorn in the side of the FF, and of course an ally of the FF, and then a thorn in the side of the FF, and an sure. ally of the FF, and a mm-hmm. thorn in the side of the FF. You know where I'm going with
Thank
this.
You. Yeah.
For a long, long, long time. And but also, you know, you're right, there's a mutant element to him as well. And in the comics over the last few years, they've introduced this antagonistic relationship between Atlantis. I was going to say Atlanta, but that's where...
Sorry, yes, Atlantis.
That's where they filmed The Walking Dead and a lot of Marvel movies, in fact.
Yeah.
But yes, Atlantis, not Atlanta. And there's been a lot of bad blood between Atlantis and Wakanda. It's difficult to say it. This is another interesting one. It's like we all know Shuri, right? So why aren't they showing Shuri? And we all know they're going to be besties-ish by the end of this movie. So that begs the question.
I'm not as sure about that as you are.
Really? I don't think that, you know, Namor, when he appeared on the scene in the comics, was a full-blown villain of sorts. But I don't think they're going to introduce him as a full-blown villain. I think they're maybe not going to be besties, but there will be an uneasy truce.
Yeah, there are ways to avoid having an entirely new other villain. And we should get into those theories because, again, Richard Newby had a really interesting idea about that, which I know you two are going to love. But I was actually thinking of that there is a possibility, there are lots of possibilities where he is the main antagonist. He just has a point that meeting on the beach is perhaps about old grudges between the two nations, which Raymonda fails to address or isn't willing to address, in the same way that T'Challa wasn't willing to do as Killmonger hoped in the last film. You know, that there are genuine political questions, and if you're leading a people, you cannot always do what your opponent wants you to do and still do the best for your people. So she may reject some demand that he makes, cue fighting, and then they may team up again simply because the toll get, or not team up again, but they may come to a truce, they may reach an agreement, they may find a way to de-escalate simply because the toll gets too high, because, you know, some other natural disaster intervenes potentially, some other threat emerges, but without it being a single person, it could be another force in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like just the rest of humanity suddenly going, hey guys, we think this is bad, please stop. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's possible that there are other things that could happen rather than just Mr. Bigger and Badder turning up.
Truce by the end? Yes, but definitely not Bessie. Like, we see footage in both trailers of Namor flooding parts of Wakanda. There's going to be words and fights and everything else that is going to be said about that, believe you me. So definitely not besties.
Oi, stop it. That's what they're going to say. Stop that.
But yeah, and obviously the flooding of Wakanda is taken from Avengers versus X-Men, when Namor had the power of the Phoenix and flooded Wakanda and killed a whole bunch of people. And that is where...
Told you, dickhead. Great A dickhead.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't like him in that particular comic. But yeah, we shall see.
We shall see. I guess you're right. And, you know, because Tony and Steve weren't besties, and it wasn't even a truce by the end of Civil War. So maybe this is going to introduce Namor as a longstanding antagonist / villain of sorts for a while, at least until he sees Sue Storm and goes all googly eyed. But there is an interesting discussion about then what is the... Is there another antagonist? So Richard Newby in his piece says that he's not saying this for sure, but he says he essentially wouldn't be surprised if Doctor Doom was being introduced in this film. Now, I have a long-standing theory, you better believe it, buddy, if you will, that Doctor Doom is going to be the main bad guy of Avengers Secret Wars, that we're watching Kang and none of us are watching Doctor Doom. And he's going to come up on the rails and blindside us all by being... If you think Namor is a grade A dick, Doctor Doom is a grade A plus dick, who's going to be very difficult to get right on the big screen. Mm-hmm. But in Feige, we trust. I don't think he's going to appear in this film, but do you think he's going to be set up?
I'm just imagining my reaction to a Doom reveal. And oh, so be amazing. Do I think Doctor Doom will appear in this film? No. But I think I could see a post-credit tease taking place in that very teasing him, like maybe showing him from behind so you don't fully see his face. A tease like that, but not like a full like Doctor Doom reveal. Here he is. Boom. I don't think we're going to get that.
I also don't think we're going to get that. I mean, look, I thought that Richard's theory was actually really compelling in the way that he led. I basically, the idea is this is about two leaders of two nations. Doom is a third. If he's talking about broken people leading nations, being great leaders, Doom would appear to also fit the bill. Those are really interesting ideas and they make a lot of sense. I just think that he is so tied to the Fantastic Four, at least in the public consciousness. I know not only them in the comics, that I feel like it would be very surprising if he were revealed properly in a Black Panther film.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see, because I just can't figure out. Maybe you guys are right. Maybe Namor is the chief antagonist, and you know, maybe it is going to end with them having a big old showdown, whoever Black Panther is, or the Black Panthers at the end. I don't know. But I do wonder if there's an ace up the sleeve. Maybe it's Martin Freeman, who's not in this trailer. Maybe Everett Ross goes off the fucking deep end in this.
Maybe the Tolkien white guys are back, you know.
Tolkien white guy. Maybe he goes full incel and just has he just goes absolutely nuts. He goes nuts on the message boards. He tries to take down, everyone down on the message boards.
I feel like I don't think it's building towards a big, simple fight. Good guy versus bad guy. I mean, you know, to some extent, the first film did, and it was the single weakest part of that film.
Yep.
And it came before a much better scene between sort of bad guy and good guy, if you will.
Oh my God, yeah. One of the best scenes in the MCU.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I wonder if it will be, you know, the two teaming up against, like I say, against a natural disaster, against a bigger threat to one of their peoples or both. Like, that would be more interesting to me and more powerful as a superhero movie, because I think Ryan Coogler is very, very aware of the power of superheroes as, you know, people who make political statements, and that the limitation of the traditional superhero figure has been that they have been large C conservative. They have been absolutely dedicated to preserving the status quo. And I think he's made it clear with the first film that he's not interested in that.
Yeah.
And so I would like to see that idea continued and explored here. And the idea that he is looking at what if superheroes tried to make the world a better place and not just fought a bad guy, you know, and the MCU throughout its career to some extent has always dabbled in this, at the very least, you know, Tony getting into green energy, all this kind of stuff. It's there in the background if you want to see it, but I like it when it's made explicit because I do believe the world can be better.
Couple of last things. I'm going through the trailer, and interestingly, the trailer, you know, gives you this you know, this very, like I say, sober opening with everybody mourning the loss of T'Challa. And of course, again, by extension, Chadwick Boseman. You also have within that, you have a sense of Namor preparing for the fight, but also I guess he had a lot of respect for T'Challa also, I guess, which is maybe why he's part of that montage. And then the trailer does something that I think that the last trailer didn't do. So the last trailer was very much about, you know, Chadwick's gone. Mm-hmm. We miss him. This film is going to be a tribute to him. It's going to be okay. And that's what that first trailer was. The second trailer is, that's going to be a huge part of this movie. But guys, there's a kick-ass Black Panther movie in here as well. And you're going to get a sense of that through the action sequences. Like a really, really fun car chase. It looks like a really fun car chase. You have hints of big, big action sequences. You have Riri Williams, who is Ironheart, in there, you know, shouting, "Let's go," which is the moment that the trailer kind of becomes upbeat and fun again. And I think one of the reasons for the running time is going to be, yes, you're going to be elegiac. Yes, you're going to have... you're going to have to pay your proper respect to Chadwick Boseman. But I think there will be a gradual lightening of the tone.
Yes.
Because I don't think it's going to be 2 hours and 41 minutes of mourning.
I agree with that. I think that's absolutely right. And you need that time to just shift your emotions gradually, sort of uphill, if you will. So I think that's what they're focusing on to some extent. I actually think the intercutting of the first part of the trailer, I don't think is necessarily straight up girding for battle. It seems to be more almost accepting a mantle, accepting a, you know, if not accepting the throne, because he's already been on the throne for a while, at least sort of, you know, there's a ceremonial aspect to it that I think is in contrast to the goodbyes that the Wakandans are saying. It's almost like a sort of hello or a welcoming or a new stage for Namor. And that was the way I took that intercutting of the first part of the trailer. But yeah, I think it'll be really interesting as well to see just like the sort of water-based attacks on presumably humanity. In general, again, I don't know that those are necessarily Wakandan oil rigs. They don't seem like an oil rig kind of people. So I feel like that's a more generalized beef with the surface world, which is interesting because, you know, obviously, again, Aquaman dabbled in that and then just gave up the idea almost immediately in one of the most dumb decisions in that wonderfully dumb film. But also, you know, it brings back to mind things like John Wyndham's The Kraken Wakes and books like that, where if the seas turn on us, we are actually quite deeply fucked. Deep pun being deliberate.
Just a couple of things about this trailer which I love. You mentioned the shifting emotions that this film is going to take you through. I feel like this trailer is a microcosm of that in a sense, because probably my favorite thing about it, and again, it was edited by Andrew Hegerly, who edited the first trailer, edited this trailer. Fantastic job. If you listen closely, Wakanda Forever is right at the start of this trailer, and it starts up as a whisper, and it comes back later in the trailer, and it gets louder and louder and louder until it's a full-blown chant. And honestly, just that gave me chills. That is just an awesome editorial decision in this trailer, which I think has a massive impact. So I love that. I feel like, given what that phrase means to Wakandans, given the fact that maybe there'll be multiple Black Panthers, maybe we're going to see multiple people in vibranium suits, I'm imagining that that might be a thing that happens in the film, which would just blow my mind. So but first, that's the first thing to say. Second to say, in the early part of this trailer, in T'Challa's funeral, Baba Mal, who is the African singer who sings on the Wakanda track, he's actually in this film. He's part of that funeral procession. So it's cool to see that he's actually sort of made his way into the actual film and will be a part of it in that way. That's cool.
Obviously, the title of the film is Wakanda Forever, and you know, we expect it to take place largely in Wakanda, a little bit in Atlantis, not Atlanta. But there are...
Can I just say, Atlantis has been renamed Talokan for this film.
For legal reasons, in case they get sued by Atlantis. Why is that?
Oh, I think that is taken from Mayan culture.
Okay.
Mayan or Aztec, I can't remember. I think it's Mayan.
All right. But I suspect the word Atlantis will be mentioned at least once in the movie.
The way Kevin Feige told me is that he said for the purposes of this movie, Atlantis will be renamed Talokan. So just by the way he phrased that, I think you might be right, because he could have just said Talokan outright, but that is how he phrased it to me.
Interesting. We shall see how it goes. But the car chase seems to be in America.
Yeah, Chicago, Illinois. It's an Illinois plates in the car that Okoye is driving. And yeah, it's a very cool stunt scene that we see her. She's got some tricks with that spear, man.
She does. And at one point we see her being flanked in that chase sequence in Chicago, but I'm guessing Riri Williams, and
yes,
who's flying something.
Ironheart Mark 1, probably.
Okay. So there's going to be some really, really interesting action. How does Riri Williams, how does Ironheart fit into this? Do you know any theories?
I suspect that she will be one of the people that Wakandans discover from their outreach programs that they start off at the end of the first film.
Is presumably one in Chicago.
Yes. So that is how Shuri and Riri connect, and obviously find that they're very similar in some aspects, but also very different. And I'm very intrigued to see what they do with that relationship. We see a little bit of it in the comics. There's a recent comic which had them meeting for the first time and teaming up for the first time, which was really, really fun. But we haven't really seen that in depth on the page yet. So they have an opportunity here to really add layers to that relationship. And it's really, really interesting that one of the things that I was saying about previous MCU entries, like Avengers Infinity War, you got people like War Machine and Falcon coming to Wakanda for the first time. And because that film has so much going on, we don't get to see them take a beat that they are in this black paradise, which has been secret for how many hundreds of years. And they, you know, what are their thoughts on that? I feel like through Vivi, who is coming from the outside world into Wakanda from Chicago, we're going to get some of that. Because especially if they bring Vivi's comic history into this film, like I think she's lost either one or both of her parents to violence of some sort.
Yeah, she lives with her aunt and uncle in Chicago in the comics.
Right. So what will she think now that, you know, Wakanda has only just revealed itself to the world? If they revealed itself sooner, maybe that could have changed. I don't know. But I feel like that would be one of the things that might come up between those two characters. When I spoke to Letitia, she was like, some of her favorite scenes are of Shuri and Vivi teaming up, especially action-wise. So that could be cool to see, because Black Panther, as cool as who this new Black Panther is, she can't fly and Vivi can. So just imagining what that might look like has me very excited.
Yeah. And there's someone on a bike here as well. I don't know who that is in that Chicago car chase. Not in the trailer that much is Lupita Nyong'o.
Yes. And just not only in the show, but just in the marketing in general. I've noticed her absence has been glaring. One theory I did have, I'm not sure if I told you guys this yet, I don't know if I want to guarantee it, but what if Nakia is pregnant with T'Challa's child? That would explain why she's not in Infinity War as well.
Possible, I guess, yeah. I thought it might mean that she was following her comic book destiny and going to the bad, potentially.
No, they're not going to do that. Not after what they did in the first film.
I'm not saying I'm hoping for it, but I you know.
Maybe she has a Nakia off with Nakia from Ms. Marvel. You can't have two Nakias. Can't do it.
Why not? We've got all of these Steves all over the superhero world, you know?
You can't have it. It'd be like having four Chrises in the superhero world. You just can't have it.
Only four? Yeah, you're
a
right.
Fanciful
It'll never
prospect.
Be that few.
An outlandish prospect. We can't possibly do that. I'm intrigued
really
by that.
I'd be really disappointed if they turn the Nakia bad. They did so much good work to redo that character in the first film. And given the relationship with T'Challa, I don't see them doing that. I don't see them doing that. I hope they don't.
we shall see. We shall see. All right, listen, it's very late. We're very tired. I'm very sick. So let's bring this bad boy to an end. Anything else you want to say that the trailer has sparked in your minds? Or, you know, do you think this is going to be, there is a little bit of a wavering of faith in the MCU movie machine? I would say a lot of people reacted quite poorly, and you two included, to Thor, Love and Thunder. Mm-hmm. Some of us, me included, reacted quite poorly to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Before that, of course, there was Spider-Man No Way Home, you know, and Eternals, which admittedly, you know, we're pretty much the only people who like that movie. Even Amon's a bit wavering on it. But, you know, if we go down the YouTube comments, someone here goes, this movie has two major things to do. And number two is restore the faith we once had in the MCU. And it's like, come on, man. Really?
Come on.
Seriously?
Come on.
She-Hulk's incredible. Come on. Take a break.
Come on.
But on the big screen, do you think that there is a reputation to restore? And if so, is this movie going to restore it? And, you know, to Best Picture nomination status again?
I think that might be a bridge too far, possibly. But I do think it's going to be a major uptick in the number of people who care about and are into these films. I think it will be much more on a par. I certainly hope it will be much more on a par with No Way Home than with Love and Thunder. I trust that it will be. I feel like this is going to be a big hit, but I don't think it's you know, no one's going to accept it as a course correction. It'll be the usual thing of, well, yes, this one was good, but the next one will suck, and so the cycle continues, the great circle of life and trolling continuing endlessly.
What is the next one after this? Is it Quantumania?
Yeah,
see, that won't suck, that's guaranteed, even though Sonny Burch isn't in it. They could have guaranteed greatness with Sonny Burch, but they chose not to. They instead, they've gone in for Armor Wars, so that film is automatically already number three in my MCU top 10. They haven't even made it.
Yeah.
No, wild.
Quantumania the fact that Kang is in that movie, just the excitement levels go way up just because of his inclusion. But yeah, no, I agree with everything Helena's saying here. Just watching these trailers, the quality of filmmaking looks like it's gone up a notch compared to what we've seen in the recent past, at least for me. You know, Ryan Coogler, he hasn't missed yet. I trust him implicitly. I've been saying for a long time, I do not envy him making this movie. It is so difficult in so many respects. And then you add in the Chadwick element of it all.
Yeah.
It is insane.
It would have been tough already without that, but it's huge. Plus, you got to introduce Riri. Plus, you got to introduce Namor. Plus, you got to do all this stuff.
At the same time, I don't trust anyone other than him to make this movie, because that is how much he's earned it through Black Panther, through Creed, through Fruitvale. He's just so impressive. And just as a leader of an ensemble, if you listen to the way these guys talk about Ryan, like, they would follow him off a cliff.
That would be alarmingly stupid.
That would be terrible leadership. I mean,
that's awful
when they
leadership.
Say broken people make good leaders, they don't mean physically, like, shattered bones. That's not what they mean. You shouldn't take people off a cliff.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. I would never, honestly, I would never follow anyone off a cliff unless there was like a T-Rex behind me or so. If going off the cliff is my only option of possible survival, then and only then. But otherwise, Amon, what are you doing? It's just mania. Anyway.
Not even Quantum Mania.
Quantum Mania. Oh my God. Quantum Mania. And then it's, what's next? Well, Quantum Mania. I used to know this shit. I'm very tired and sick. Quantum Mania. Then it's the Marvels. And then it's Guardians 3. Yeah. I think next year is going to be a solid, solid year. Helen doesn't because it's a Guardians movie, but honestly, she can take her cynicism and stow it.
I'm not super hyped about Quantumania, but every day is Christmas Eve around here, so.
I am super hyped about all three of those movies. Everett Ross, king of the incels, may not be, but screw that guy. He's not even in this trailer. Can I say one last thing? One last thing that I really like about the quality of the filmmaking in this trailer. And I love the MCU. I don't know if that's become clear over the podcasts we've done about it over the last few years. I think one of the things that perhaps dogged, Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, and Thor, Love and Thunder, was they felt a little green screeny. They felt a little bit, let's do the show right here, and we can put in a nice background later on, and we can fiddle with it, you know, in post. This movie is putting the emphasis, at least in the trailer, on sets, great sets, and on locations. There seems to be a lot of really, really good location work. Like that scene, I may be completely wrong about this, and there may be like, they may have just used the volume in the way that the Batman used a lot of the volume, and you're sitting watching the Batman going, this location work is incredible, and it's like, no, that's they took the volume to the next level, the LED volume to the next level, and went to Glasgow and Liverpool, but you know what I mean. And this, I mean, that scene between Namor and Ramonda on the beach looks like they went to a beach. I may be wrong about that, but it does. It looks that way. All the stuff in Chicago looks like it was shot maybe not in Chicago, but, you know,
Chicago
on a
is
very,
actually,
very good. It's very friendly.
Chicago is pretty, friendly to shoot. And I was there once on one film set. Well, I can say now, can't I? It was Widows years ago. And I spent a day on Widows. Ooh. But on my day off afterwards, when I was walking around Chicago, they were shooting Rampage. And there was literally helicopters flying up and down the main street in Chicago, like the main city street. So, they are very, very friendly to filmmakers, I think, in Chicago. Yeah.
But the CG fuckfest element of the last two movies it's a little present here. There's a scene with Namor, and obviously, you know, he's against green screen, and the compositing's pretty good, but it's still, you can still tell it's an effect. But everything else looks and feels real, or more real than certain shots in Love and Thunder and Multiverse of Madness.
I'm just so excited. This film is pretty close to coming out now, which means that I need to go online and order my traditional African garments, because I'm going to do this film right when the screening or the premiere comes out. I'm going to get the kimono beads. I'm going to get the Black Panther necklace. It's going to be a whole thing. I can't wait.
Vibranium?
Of course.
All right. Maybe I will be with you after all. Maybe I do need to see that. We shall see how it goes. Just over a month to go until Black Panther Wakanda Forever opens. Very, very excited indeed. But listen, on that note, I need to collapse and you guys need to go to bed. Thank you so much for listening to this. I hope you guys enjoyed it despite the delirium. It's goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Amon Worman.
Peace.
Hey, just a reminder that you can actually pick up the latest issue of Empire, which has Black Panther Wakanda Forever on the cover, and Amon spoke to everybody pretty much from that movie for that, so that's on sale right now in all good, evil and virtual news agents as well. And it's also goodbye from, oh, hey, Helen, what film is Let's Not Start Sucking Each Other's Dicks just yet from?
It's Pulp Fiction. Mr. Wolf, Let's Not Start Sucking Each Other's Dicks.
Mr. Wolf, Harvey Keitel, of course, yes. Well, there's no good way out of this, except to say thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Bye.